You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
I might see if they can open the community pool tonight for just a couple of hours for a little dip in the pool.
I know. It'd be a good way to cool off.
48.
I said to Dan earlier, it's time to get the summer clothes back out.
Man.
Downright balmy.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Just hope it melts a lot of this snow because tomorrow's going to be real nice too, I think.
Yes.
And then the bottom drops out about midday on Saturday. You know how much of a moron I am, weirdo. Yeah. Well, I haven't finished the sentence, Dan, about people's...
He had heard
didn't
enough.
Really need to go any further.
About people's pipes in their homes, right, in cold weather.
Yeah.
So it has become a mini tradition this week. Every night, I call Sarah, mm-hmm. you know, because she just got a house, and she goes, is it drip night or not drip night? And lately, I've been saying it's going to be a drip night. And I told her last night, I said, but when you wake up tomorrow morning, you can go ahead and turn it off because it's going to be in the 40s by the afternoon. Your pipes are fine. And you can leave them off until you go to bed Friday night.
Yeah, the relative, I mean, it's in the mid-40s right now, and it feels really good out there. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, when it drops to 65, we're all shivering. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, whoa, shirt sleeves, let's go out and run around.
Sad news about old Bob Uecker. Who I did not know as a player nor as a broadcaster. He played long before all of our times and broadcast up in Milwaukee. I first came to know him as Harry Doyle in the movie Major League, which
really?
Which was just an absolutely brilliant, I thought, brilliant comedy movie.
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
And Dana remembers him from this little nugget.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of the best things about being an ex-big leaguer is getting freebies to the game. Call the front office, bingo. And once these fans recognize me, I probably won't even have to pay for my light beer from Miller.
Down the crack!
I love them. These fans know I drink light because it's less filling and it tastes great. Good seats, huh?
You're in the wrong seat, buddy. Come on.
Oh, I must be in the front row.
Come on. Light beer from Miller.
Oh, I must be in the front row.
My dad went around saying that for years. In the front row.
Don't worry. Nobody's listening anyway.
That's right. Mm-hmm. When he says GD on the broadcast in Major League, and the kid who sits next to him, who never says a word, is supposed to be his color commentator, puts his hand over Harry Doyle's microphone. He said, and the only line he has in the movie, he goes, you can't say that. And he looks over at the kid and goes, it doesn't matter. Nobody's listening anyway. I forgot about that line, man.
You know, I've always said in the last, I don't know, 2-3 years on this program, you can run, but you cannot hide because of updated DNA technology if you are a serial killer or a rapist. And my God, I just saw this story that scares me to death, but I am so thrilled they finally caught this guy. DNA on a coffee cup has tied a man that had no criminal record, no criminal history, and was not on anyone's radar.
Huh.
DNA on that coffee cup has tied a man in Michigan to at least 2 sex assaults on golf courses.
Sorry?
Listen to this story. A man accused of sexually assaulting women at golf courses more than 400 miles apart has now been sentenced in one of the alleged attacks. Kurt Relema, a 52-year-old man, pleaded no contest in December to criminal sexual conduct and got 10 to 15 years in prison. An avid golfer, he was accused of sexually assaulting a young woman working at a food stand in Twin Lakes in September of 1999. Came through an employee entrance. Victim was 22 years old. Mm. Absolutely awful what she survived. Investigators then later learned of a similar case in 2000. Victim was a 19-year-old at a Pennsylvania golf course. Again, this is 400 miles away from each other. DNA evidence confirmed the alleged assaults involved the same man. And then guess what? As part of a 2-state investigation, a DNA, quote, technology company helped police conclude that the assaults were carried out by one of 3 brothers. You know how the whole family tree thing works, Scott. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They knew it was one of the 3 of them.
So now you just got to follow all
three?
Now
you got to figure out which three golf, which three would have been in Pennsylvania on this date. And then they worked backward.
So
and
we're presuming this is like a 23andMe
is caught.
Company.
It doesn't name the company.
But one of those kind of companies, like a genealogy company?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And what's interesting again about that, he was never on anyone's radar, had no criminal history. And I always say in cases like that, that's the two women we know about.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
That's two we know about. You don't just wake up one day and start raping women on golf courses. So, you know what?
Good.
They can run.
I'm glad.
They can't hide. The law will catch up to you because of that technology.
If you or someone you know in your family has given their DNA to 23andMe or I don't know what the other ones are called, but you better make a pact with yourself and with God that you will be doing no criming for the rest of your life. And
it will catch up with
you. Yes. Or if you've done any criming, start getting nervous.
Yep.
What happened in Lawrence?
Oh, God. Now we go to Lawrence. Okay. So we're not going to give the address.
Okay. Good.
But if you live there, you certainly know that your home is on fire.
It's in far western Lawrence.
It is in far, it's in far western Lawrence where someone that I follow on Twitter posted from the, you know, broadcast scanner traffic. It says level one structure fire. Homeowner trying to melt the ice off their house with blowtorch. Caught house on fire. Engine one, three, ladder four, five medic, three medic, four battalion, one battalion, two respond.
Oh, the old flamethrower to the ice.
The old blowtorch.
I bet State Farm's not going to say, well, we've seen that one before. And they're probably not going to cover it either.
You don't want to see anyone have their house catch fire. However, I looked up the address. Here's what I don't understand.
That's not a bad neighborhood.
You want to know what Zillow lists this property?
I'm going to guess it's north of 500.
Before the blowtorch or after?
Before.
Okay.
Great question, Sam. It is about a 4,000 square foot house. It is not on the market, but the last time it was, the Zestimate
600
is north of $600,000. Not that people can't pick up a blowtorch and burn down a $600,000 house.
Those are nice neighborhoods out
but
there.
But that is some pricey real estate
in
Lawrence.
It's a very trendy place in Lawrence, yeah.
I don't know what would be clogged. And we might take calls on this.
Happy to.
You know, why would anyone think this was a good idea? And the home that I grew up in, Scott, just to let you know, nearly burned to the ground several years ago because someone was welding in the garage on a windy day. And I think there were hay bales also inside the garage.
Smart.
So we know that these things happen, but why with ice would you go up on a ladder?
First of all, there's no reason.
What would be clogged? I'm being serious. As a homeowner, what would be up there that it would be critical to bring in fire?
A dryer vent, but you would think that the air from the dryer would melt the ice or snow. Here's the thing. He already had a blowtorch. It's called the Sun. It has melted almost all of the snow that was on my roof.
I just can't come up with a scenario under which this makes sense.
You're not smart.
Construction, yes. If there was a legitimate construction reason, that's not what the scanner said. Homeowner using blowtorch.
So it did say homeowner, not a company that was coming over to do some work on the roof.
Homeowner.
Okay.
Trying to melt ice off house with blowtorch, caught house on fire.
Now, Scott, you had mentioned how most of the snow on your roof is no longer there.
Yeah, the sun melted it.
I was over at a buddy's house last weekend, and the home next to that house, there was a ice crystal that started at the peak of the roof and ran down the side of the home, probably 35 feet all the way to the ground. And it was solid ice about 8 inches wide.
You take a broom to it.
I would bet that is still there.
Well, somebody on the text line says ice dams in the gutter. It can do a lot of damage. Well, you know what else does a lot of damage? Fire. Coming from a blowtorch. I get it, you know. You don't want your gutters filled with ice as the snow starts to melt. But I'd rather take that mild amount of water damage than take a blowtorch up there. I mean, if you have to put some heat up there, use a hairdryer or something. But a blowtorch? I think not.
I wouldn't tell anyone you did that. Now we're telling everyone. But I wouldn't tell it. I would just say, lightning strike, we don't know what happened.
Dana, we haven't had lightning in the area in almost 3 weeks.
I would make up UFO invasion, drone hit the north side of the house.
Somebody set my house on fire.
Make up something that is not, I took a blowtorch to it.
We did have thunder snow, and where there is thunder,
thank you,
there is lightning.
913-586-7798, 913-586-7798, here on Dana and Parks. All right, welcome back. Good to be with you on a, dare I say, balmy Thursday afternoon. 48 degrees right now.
Are we listening to Juice Newton right now? Because I am, yes. I am here for that.
We are. Just call me Angel.
First concert I ever went to.
Really?
There'll be no strings to bind my hands.
I will say, and I mean this, 43 tomorrow, by the way, for the high.
Ooh.
And don't get carried away. Then the bottom falls out. I will say,
make it sound like it's so bad. It's the winter.
It sucks. But I will say this. I've never been heard or been involved in a show that had better bumper music than Dana and Parks. That's a fact.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Eric in Kansas City, we're talking about this homeowner in Lawrence who set his or her house on fire by trying to use a blowtorch to get ice and or snow off the roof. Hello, Eric.
Hello, how are you doing?
We're doing well, thank you.
So I was just going to comment that I used to be a roofer for quite some time, and when we had heavy snows like this with prolonged cold, you could often get what's called an ice dam, where the attic heat will melt the snow at the surface of the roof. The water will run down to the bottom of the roof where it's over the open exposed eave where it's colder, and then it will refreeze and actually form a blockage to letting the water get off the roof, and you can get a pretty severe leak. And being a roofer in the service department, we get frantic calls from customers that were having terrible leaks and would want us to blowtorch their roof or chisel the ice off. And we just really couldn't because there's too much of a risk for damaging the home, as you can probably see from what may have happened today. And I'm not sure that's what happened. I haven't watched the news, but it's really common. And they've actually started adding products to the bottom edge of the roofs to try and avoid this happening.
But other than some sort of chemical, I would assume, there's nothing else that they can do to prevent that?
There are heat cables that you could install, but those also have a little bit of a fire risk, and they use energy, so you're burning the meter to power those. But that would be an option if you had a limited area where you needed a little extra help.
Eric,
you may have seen cables in a zigzag pattern along the bottom edge of the roof. That's what those are for, is to heat up the snow and keep that from freezing up at the bottom.
Okay. Regardless, I would be telling everyone that a flamethrower came down from outer space.
Yes.
And targeted my house in one spot specifically. I would be making
up. Which is much more believable.
Any number of stories that did not involve I climbed up on a ladder with a blowtorch.
From the text line, guys, look, the fire did get rid of the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Job well done.
Got rid of the house, too. Mike in Shawnee. Mike, hello.
Oh, I love you, love you. She loves your show.
Thank you.
And you might remember this. There was a farmer who he had an old barn on his farm property, and he was tired of it. He was going to tear it down. But then he said, I'm not going to spend all that time. And so he torched it and burned it to the ground. And then he got charged with arson, even though it was completely on his land. It was a farmland. And
well, wait a minute. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But what about... I'm not saying you're
telling the arson charges. And with this person, I was actually going to say, I mean, even though he has an expensive house, you really never know if somebody's actually got money or not. But I was going to say he could have hired a professional to do it. But the previous caller said, there's not much you can do.
Yeah,
right. A professional blow torture person.
Yeah, I mean, you can Google things, just people up north and stuff. But, they have tricks and stuff, from Canada, how to get snow and ice off the roof. But I guess... flamethrowers are legal, but, this guy could get charged with arson.
I mean, why not use a broom or something?
From the text line, just say it was a meteorite.
Right. Okay.
Maybe it was the Alaskan Airlines plane.
Back to his story about some guy who lived out in the country who apparently set his barn on fire because he wanted to get rid of it.
That shouldn't be illegal. If you have an old dilapidated barn that is dangerous and falling in on itself, how is that arson if you safely control burn that to get rid of it?
The comparison I was going to make is, what about people who burn brush on their property? I mean, I've driven home, and I'm sure in the city you probably have to get a permit to do that. Out in the country, I bet you don't. But I've driven home in the fall or in the spring, and I've seen people off of Shawnee Mission Parkway that have a small, very controlled burn going on their property. Now, granted, their property is much larger than your typical yard, but they're just burning brush to get rid of it. Is that arson?
Or burning off acres of land because that portion of your field, it was time for a good burn. By the way, that would fall under arson. There is no specification under arson, whether it's building, car, anything. You set anything on fire intentionally,
okay, but
you can be charged with arson.
I agree in the city where your neighbors are like right there and right there. But I'm thinking more like go way out on I-70 west of Topeka. You have a barn that is falling down. You cannot control burn that barn. Like a barn that is like separate structure way away from the house.
I have no idea.
You know, when we drive by those, you've seen them where it looks like, I don't know, there's some serial killer stuff going on inside that property. You know, where it's like completely mm-hmm. fallen in. There's mm-hmm. trees growing out of it. If it's a nuisance and it's dangerous, do you not have the right to burn that down?
Well, you have the right to burn it. You also have the right to be charged with arson.
Yeah, I have the right to say the F word once.
I feel like I'd call the fire department and say, here's what I'm planning to do.
Well, I bet you have to. It's definitely in the city. I would bet you have to get a burn permit would be my guess.
Correct. Just say, look, this is what I want to do. How does this work? Because it's falling apart. It's a danger.
I was going down to Wichita sometime last year to go see a concert with my brother. And I was driving through the Flint Hills. And they were on fire.
Oh, it's stunning.
Oh, it is beautiful country. No doubt about
it. It is a controlled burn.
This was not. I mean, it was miles and miles of fires in fields and off the side of the highway. Mm. I mean, there were some fires that were right next to the highway. No one around.
Was it the spring?
It might have been.
Well, that's a controlled burn. That's how they do it.
Well, who's controlling it? I never saw a single person.
A whole lot of people.
Yeah.
The highway. It was. I mean, there were times it was hard to see. There was so much smoke.
Well, you'll see on I-35 or in that area, there are signs that say, in the spring, watch for dense smoke. Do not drive through.
Speaking of out of control, when we get back, my favorite story of the day, it will be yours. We have a toddler, an errant toddler, who decided during a college basketball game.
You're gonna storm the court.
To storm the court. Party of one. I cannot stop laughing because we've all been there.
He's cute.
Like where it's late and your toddler is tired and just kind of wants to just run. Mm-hmm. This little buddy just runs right onto the court of play during the basketball game. And we will tell you how they got him off the court. It's even funnier than how he got on the court.
We'll get to that in just a moment. 913-586-7798 here on Dana and Parks. Before we get to Dana's super sweet story about the kid and the basketball court, from ABC News, police are hunting for a suspect who was allegedly caught on camera violently robbing an 83-year-old woman of her lottery winnings shortly after claiming them from a convenience store.
No.
The incident occurred on yesterday morning about 8 o'clock outside of a store on Curie Ford Road in Orlando, Florida. Authorities posted surveillance footage of the violent robbery on social media, where the unnamed 83-year-old woman is seen walking out of the store to her car with what looks to be the lottery winnings that she had just collected. The story does not say how much she
how
had.
Much.
And I thought about this morning. I was at a grocery store, and I was at the customer service desk to get something. And there was a guy in front of me who was turning in his lottery tickets, and I saw the clerk hand over $38. And I didn't think of robbing him, of course. I mean, that's his money. I don't want it.
Well, you thought about it for a second, and then you were like, no.
What I did think is, you know, good thing I'm a always-do-weller, not a ne'er-do-well, because what if that was, you know, $300 or $500 that this guy got? I now know that that guy walking out to his car has $500 in his wallet.
It's a real concern. I once got screamed at because some lady won $80, and I counted, you know. We count the money out so that everybody knows that everybody's square and nobody's, you know, I'm not giving you an extra 20 or shorting you a 20. I counted out the 20s and she screamed at me because I counted them out loud. Well, I'm sorry.
Anyway, he dragged the woman from her car into the parking lot and stole her winnings and ran off. Okay, let's get some good news.
Okay, I just saw this on the ABC Evening News with David Muir.
David Muir, elbows out.
It is the best story of the day. An errant toddler decided he had had enough and stormed the court party of one during a late night college basketball game. And the way they get him off the court is the funniest damn thing I've ever seen. Here's the quote. We have a kid on the floor.
Okay.
Those were the words of the Radford men's basketball broadcast team after a child unexpectedly burst onto the court during a timeout in the late Big South game between the Highlanders and Gardner-Webb on Wednesday. The child managed to get in. He's crazy. He gone. A couple of laps around the court. They could not catch this child.
At least he has clothes on.
3 to 4 years old, if I had to guess.
Yeah, three.
And he is having the time of his life. He gets all the way to the three-point line and is just giggling and giggling. And then one of the players, like this gigantic, you know, 6 foot.
Seven.
Yeah. Player from the Highlanders scoops him up like picture Frankenstein with both arms out. Do you know how a college kid that's not used to having a baby or a toddler would hold a child? This is how he holds that child.
It was at arm's
length. Like way out at arm's length. Yeah. And then like Frankenstein walks him over to either a coach or some sort of school official.
I thought it might look like his dad.
It is just the funniest thing.
Because I'm sure dad is running around trying to catch his kid.
Radford coach Darris Nichols, quoting here, it was a huge part of the game, he said post-game with a chuckle, like an important part of the game. Mm-hmm. And then when the kid ran onto the court, I told the ref, please don't give us a technical for this. On Thursday, the Big South Conference got in on the phone by releasing a statement about the, quote, unprecedented and truly pint-sized moment of excitement. The fan, estimated to be about 3 feet tall and just shy of kindergarten eligibility, showcased impressive agility as he dodged staff and bewildered players. Thanks to the quick thinking of a Radford player and a parent aspiring babysitter, the situation was safely resolved when the child was carried off the court.
Did I ever tell you guys the story of when I became the center of attention at Christmas Mass?
Oh no.
What happened?
I can't remember if it was like the 10 p.m. Mass or if it was a Mass Christmas morning. It was obviously before my memory,
right?
You know, set in. I was a little kid. I have no idea what age I was, 3, 4, 5, 6, doesn't matter. And we go into Christmas Mass. We're running late. I'm sure I was the reason that we were running late. And, you know, anybody who's familiar with going to church, there are multiple times throughout church where it is silent. And it was one of those times. My mom was walking in, trying to sneak in the back, being super quiet. I ripped out of my mom's hand, and I ran down the center aisle towards the altar right in front of the priest and screamed, "Who let the dogs out?"
No way.
You did not.
Over and over again until my mom caught up to me, grabbed me by my shirt collar, and we did not attend Mass that day.
Yep. You ran in, and she dragged you out by your ear.
Mm-hmm. We did not attend Mass that day. Remind me, are you a millennial or Gen Zer?
I am a Gen Zer.
Okay.
I'm the eldest Gen Z.
So, story here from the New York Post. It's not exactly working for Gen Z. Zoomer employees are struggling in just about every metric, according to a new study from MetLife that examines the physical, social, mental, and financial well-being of different generations. Quoting here from Todd Katz, who's with MetLife, part of the study, Gen Z is not necessarily doing well. Our study showed holistic health for all employee age groups is down a bit, but it is down the most for Gen Z. According to the survey, holistic health among workers has decreased the most among Gen Z with a 6% drop from last year, a score that is lower than a similar age group reported 5 years ago. It says here, the headline is, Gen Zers already feel like they're suffering from a midlife crisis.
I prefer to call it the quarter life crisis. I'd like to give myself more longevity than that.
What do you mean? What do you mean mid? What's going to happen?
It says here the findings coincide with a recent study that reported a whopping 38% of Gen Zers are facing a, quote, midlife crisis due to financial stress. One in 10 were turning down job offers because of the cost of commuting or buying work clothes.
Wait, or buying work clothes.
Okay, well, that last line is a bit ridiculous, but up until that, I could understand.
See if there's anything else in here. The financial stress comes from paying back student debt, child care, insurance for pets.
Wait.
Well, there's a place where you can save a little bit of money. I've had some pets in my life. I've never insured a single one.
Well, did you not wish you did with the cat that got the issue with the leg and then we lost the leg? I mean, that was some money that probably you could not afford to part with at the time.
Sean and I were newly married, living in, we had just bought our first house in Olathe. So we were in our late 20s. And I mean, and it was a cheap house. Don't get me wrong. It was cheap. But then Arsenio came down with the cancer in his back right leg, and we had it amputated. And then that was like $2,000. We didn't have $1,000, $2,000, whatever it was. And then as soon as we got him home, he hopped around on three legs for about 2 weeks, and the cancer came back, and this time it was in his lungs. And so we had to put him down. I had told Shonda, I'm not cutting off some cat's leg. I mean,
his name is Arsenio, not Eileen.
Or Skip.
Sorry. He lived a long, healthy life.
Not really.
Until the very end.
I think he was like six. I think he was six. Some cats live to be in their 20s, you know. He was a youngin'. Sorry.
God rest his soul. Bless his three-legged horn.
I'm going to call him Hopper.
From the USA Today. He was actually pretty good.
He could agile.
He could maneuver stairs. He would go up and down the stairs and for about 3 weeks, and then the cancer came back. You know, he was kind of like a member of our family, Dana.
Sorry.
From the USA Today. Nutrition labels on your favorite grocery items may soon sport a new look. The FDA announcing this week a new proposal that would require food and drink manufacturers to place nutrition labels on the front of their products instead of the back. The labels would also include new information.
Because we're too lazy to turn it around?
Apparently.
Come on.
Tell me this. I have here a can of Sprite.
I see that.
And then there's the nutrition label right there on this side.
Shift it ever so slightly.
Where is the front of this can?
I don't know. It's cylindrical.
Right. I think it's not in reference to round items.
No, make it about the box.
So we have to put it on the front?
On the boxed items, you would put the nutrition value on the front. Though, you know, I will say this. We went to a restaurant last night. I'd never been Medi's, and it's phenomenal, by the way.
Let me guess. Mediterranean food?
Oh, it's so good. And, you know, like chicken and rice and hummus and all that stuff. Their nutritional values were up there on the menu, and I like that.
I'm for this change.
Why?
I think that they need to have the vital nutritional facts on the front.
If you're buying a bag of Doritos, don't you know that there's probably, you know, calories in them?
You'd be surprised how many people don't know that that's cheese product and not cheese. There is zero cheese in a bag of Doritos.
I can't save you from your own stupidity.
Well, that's true.
If you don't realize as an adult that the nutrition label is on every product that you buy, then you're too dumb to help. Everybody knows it's on the back.
Why put a cancer warning label on cigarettes?
If you don't know that cigarettes can cause cancer, go ahead and smoke.
I mean, you know.
Because you're too dumb. But to Dana's point, I mean, if you're down the chips aisle and you grab a bag of Doritos, you don't realize that that is a less healthy alternative than, a bag of carrots? Well,
let's not pick Doritos. Let's pick something that might have
I've got
a
one.
Facade of being healthy.
Yes, I got one. Because for years, I had no idea. When you go to buy a can of tuna, and yes, I know that's cylindrical, but follow me here. When you go to buy a can of tuna, if you are not paying attention and you don't get the tuna in water, which is like zero calories, and you accidentally pick the tuna in oil, it goes from zero calories to like a bajillion like that.
And that's not good oil. That is bad fatty oil,
right? And so that would be one example where you might not realize the one can versus the other can, unlike, you know, soda or diet soda. I remember seeing that at one point and went, oh, my Lord.
I hear your point, but my point is simply everybody, well, maybe they don't. I thought most people knew that you could turn the product, whether it's circular or a box or whatever, and there would be a nutrition label on it somewhere. So to your point, Dana, the tuna in water versus the tuna in oil.
Right.
If I'm picking this up and I'm concerned enough to look at the nutrition label on the back, I'm going to say, oh, wait a minute, this has so many grams of saturated fat or, you know, carbohydrates or calorie. The calorie count is a lot higher than I thought. Then you turn the can back around. You say, oh, this is in oil, not water. And I put it back and I get the one with water.
Yeah, most people aren't that attentive.
Okay.
What if a box has three sides, like your cat?
Wow.
Story here from CBS News in Houston. Rats are consuming drugs that were seized and stored by the Houston Police Department. And hundreds of cases could now be vulnerable to the infestation. It is an issue that has prompted the district attorney to alert defense lawyers in more than 3,600 open drug-related cases, although only one active case has so far been impacted by the rats. Just one example, says the Houston mayor at a news conference. We've got 400,000 pounds of marijuana in storage that the rats are really enjoying. Joshua Reese, general counsel at the Harris County District Attorney's Office, said the rats also got into packaging containing mushrooms, and not the kind you put on your food. Okay. TikTok is telling its employees in the U.S. that even if the U.S. Supreme Court does not overturn a law that would force the sale of the short video app in the United States or ban it, the company's leadership says U.S. employees will keep their jobs. The hugely popular platform is owned by ByteDance in China, has 7,000 employees in the U.S. Says, who's this quote from? This is in the memo. I cannot emphasize enough that your well-being is a top priority, and so most importantly, I want to reinforce that as employees in the U.S., your employment, pay, and benefits are secure. Our offices will remain open, even if this situation has not been resolved before Sunday. And what are the most popular dream jobs in America? And these are not what you would think. Actor is not on the list. Rock star is not on the list. Hedge fund manager is not on the list. And by the way, this is not in the U.S. This is in the world and the United States.
Balloon maker of animals?
No. Number 10 is judge. Oh, I'm sorry. Actor is number 9. I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Number 8 is prosecutor. Scoring higher than those three, number 7, midwife.
Okay.
Midwife. Physical therapist is number 6. Nurse is number 5. Pharmacist is 4. Police officer is 3. Attorney is 2.
Wow, that really surprises me.
And number 1.
Zookeeper?
Nope. Oh. Pilot.
Radio talk show host?
Pilot. No, radio talk show host did not make it.
I'm ashamed.
Oh, we meant to get to this today, and I hope I don't butcher his name. Another professional athlete's home has been burglarized.
Oh, we got to bring this back tomorrow.
We will. Let me just touch on it so people don't think we missed the news. Pittsburgh Penguins forward Evgeny Malkin had his home broken into and burglarized over the weekend, and his 3 Stanley Cup championship rings are missing. The Penguins say they are working with local police as well as team security officials, and that Malkin is requesting privacy during what the team called an ongoing investigation. He won the championship rings in 2009, 2016, 2017 with the Penguins. The alarm system and cameras at the home happened to be down at the time of the break-in, and his safe was left open.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the team was playing on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Assuming they knew he wouldn't be there.
We will bring that back tomorrow.
We will. We got to run. Don't forget, tomorrow at 5 o'clock is Festivus Friday, the airing of the grievances. The week is almost over. Tomorrow's going to be a beautiful winter day, mid-40s for the high temperature. On behalf of our producer today, the finest man in these United States, the great Sam Stevie III, my good friend and co-host Dana Wright. My name is Scott Parks, and God willing, We're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Have a great night. Be safe. Be well. And be good.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.